So you remember when we talked about the testimony of the university presidents in front of Congress investigating anti-Semitism on campuses? One of them was Dr. Claudine Gay, who was the president of Harvard. She was asked this same simple question by Congressperson Stefanik about calling for intifada and the murder and death of Israel and Jews, and whether or not that crossed the line when it came to Harvard. Well, she took a lot of heat. Harvard has taken a lot of heat. A lot of people are saying that they're going to, you know, maybe withdraw or hold back their funds. Some have called for her resignation, etc. One person who is a friend of mine, a childhood friend of mine, who went to Harvard for a year of study and teaching, was asked to be on a committee after all this happened on October 7th, one of, quote, trusted voices, eight trusted voices that President Gay asked to serve on a committee on anti-Semitism. His name is David Wolpe, he's a rabbi there, and he just resigned from that committee, saying that the ideology that grips far too many of Harvard's students and faculty, the ideology that works only along axes of oppression and places Jews as oppressors and therefore intrinsically evil, is itself evil. He's on the line with us right now. David, how are you?
Hi, Mitch. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, so I'm sure this wasn't what you had in mind when you thought you'd take a nice year
at Harvard. I remember telling you that I was going off to Harvard for a year and I was going to be able to sit and read and write and
teach a little.
It didn't work out that way.
Didn't work out that way. But now you find yourself, you know, and I admire what you did because you stood up for your principles. And basically, after, was it something in President Gay's testimony that made you say, I can't in good conscience continue to be on this committee?
So it was, I had already thought, we're not getting anywhere. And then the problem was that we were her advisory committee, which meant in part that the way she presented herself was presumably how we would have advised her, which of course was not the case in this case. And I want to say that I know her and I like her. And I think that she's a thoughtful and a kind person. But there were 100 ways that question could have been answered that would have been better. I mean, had she just shown some indignation, even if she answered it the same way as I'm sure the lawyers said to, but had said, this is unacceptable, and we at Harvard hate the idea that there's anti-Semitism here, and we're going to do everything we can to eradicate it, and like pounded the table, something. It would have been a lot easier to justify my staying on the committee. But at a certain point, I just had to admit that I wasn't making a difference. And if you're not, then you shouldn't be there.
So my question is, why didn't she? Why didn't the president of Penn, which I know is a school that you attended undergraduate, what's the problem with coming out and saying, no, we do not tolerate calls for the death of Jews? If someone were to say, okay, there's a group that says we think that all African-Americans should be lynched, you don't say, well, it depends the context in which they say it. You wouldn't say it depends on if they force people into action. These are the answers that were actually given by these university presidents. So you're in a university system. You're at Harvard. Why were all three of them almost gagging on the idea of saying we don't permit anti-Semitism to be hollered on our campus?
Well, it's really important to say first that other university presidents proved you could do it. Your alma mater president did it. University of Florida did it. I mean, you can do it. So it's not that it was legally impossible or morally impossible. But I think, I understand why she didn't say it. And this is part of the problem, is there is an ideology at Harvard and elsewhere, as I've said, that, you know, everybody is either an oppressor or an oppressed. You divide people like with a meat cleaver, and they're axes of oppression. So black is more oppressed than white, women more oppressed than men, LGBTQ more oppressed than straight, and all you add up, and And that's how you know who is right in something and who is wrong. And of course, while it is true, obviously, that there are more and less oppressed groups, it doesn't tell you anything about the conduct of an individual, and it doesn't say anything about that group in this particular circumstance.
Right.
But that's the ideology. Jews are oppressors, and therefore they can't suffer, which is ridiculous and immoral. But if she went and said, yeah, the Jews are suffering this oppression, then she would have probably a full-scale revolt on her hands.
Well, I don't know if you saw Peggy Noonan's piece on the rape thing in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was today, where she's talking about the silence of these women's groups, also yep. on progressive universities. And she used a phrase, she said, what they reveal is that they're not really for women, they're for the team. The team being the mentality of oppressor versus oppressed. The team being the far left progressive part of the Democratic Party. And if she's right and then you're right, then I get it. What they're saying is, look, yeah, you know, maybe in our heart of hearts, we know that Hamas going over and murdering and raping Israelis isn't right. But, hey, they're on our team and the team is oppressed. And we got to stand up for the oppressed. It's like watching a football game. You know, you never committed the penalty. The ref got it wrong, you know. And I mean, it's like, that's kind of what this is, isn't it?
I swear to God, that's exactly right. I mean, when you think about it, there was a group that held this sign that said Queers for Hamas.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, they would throw you off the roof if you were in Gaza.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so it becomes a ridiculous, almost absurd that, as you say, as long as you're on our team, you can do the most unimaginable things. And we will say you didn't do it or it was justified.
Yeah. What's crazy, though, is that even within that definition, it isn't that easy, oppressed versus oppressor. Okay, if you want to look at who has a bigger military, Israel or Gaza.
Right.
Yeah. But bring your lens out a little bit. You know, bring it up to the sky and look down on the region. Israel sits amongst, what, 5-6 nations that are surrounded by Arabs, largely Muslim, many of whom would like to see the destruction of Israel, many of whom teach in their schools that there is no Israel. They don't have a right to be there. Now, who's the oppressed? In the United
Right.
States of America, Jews make up 2% of the population and have 60% of the religious hate crimes. So who's the oppressed? So even by their own definition, they're taking the wrong side.
I want to say to them, look, there are 50 Muslim countries. There should be one Jewish one.
Right.
It's not such it doesn't seem like such a ridiculous request of the world.
Right.
When you pull the camera back, of course it's ridiculous. And not only that, but we're talking about a country that has at least on 6 separate occasions made peace offerings to the Palestinians. And when you want to make peace, Israel does, and that's proved by the fact that it did with Egypt and it did with Jordan and it did with all the Abraham Accord countries. And the only thing they needed to do was say, okay, we won't try to destroy you.
Right.
It's not that high
well,
a bar.
I forget who said it, but it was like if Hamas laid down its arms, there would be peace. If Israel laid down its arms, there would be no Israel.
Mm.
You know,
exactly.
And unfortunately, this proves to be true. So what has happened with you and Harvard? I think you're thinking of transferring to Macomb Community College for the rest of your
right.
sabbatical. Yeah. You're
I
welcome.
Think that's clearly. That is clearly what I should be doing. Here's the thing that I think is really encouraging. I want to say this. First of all, everybody has been, at least to my face, has been nice. The Divinity School, I don't know how they feel about me. I can imagine. But I was just at the candle lighting at Harvard at Widener Library right in front. And I had student after student after student come up to me and say, thank you so much for doing what you did. Mm. And I have to say, you know, it like warms my heart because these students don't feel, they feel like nobody's watching out for them there and they don't feel safe. And it's like, it sounds ridiculous because they're going to Harvard. So they're obviously supposed to be on top of the world, but that's not how it feels to them.
I'm sure that's the case at Penn and MIT and some of these other schools.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
David, thank you for taking a little time to talk to us here. I know this isn't
always
how you
a
planned
pleasure
your
to talk
sabbatical.
To you, Mitch.
Well, right. David and I did have this talk about it. He said, I'm going to go to Harvard for the year. And I said, that sounds relaxing.
Right. Taking it easy for you.
Big shot. Going to Harvard for a year.
By the Charles River.
We better get next year's plans.
So much for that.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Take care of yourself.
It's 760 WJR. We'll continue.